Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the BFG podcast. We were gone last week because we were both feeling pretty sick. This week we're still a little bit congested, but we're doing a lot better.
It's all Tyler's fault anyways.
I mean, it's always my fault.
And the stupid baby.
Yeah, me and the baby. It's just...
She's looking at me.
We give out germs like candy.
Oh, disgusting.
But... point being, last week we were going to do the, I guess, quasi-reboot of Halloween, and then its sequel, Halloween Kills. We were going to deep dive into those, and we were going to talk about the top 10 movies on IMDb and rank those, and we kind of gave up on both of those. We gave up on Halloween mostly because after watching Halloween and giving it a week, neither one of us were super excited to talk about it anyway. We might eventually do that a couple weeks down the road if we need something to talk about, but just a quick couple of notes. Halloween Kills was not that great, not really worth seeing or talking too much about.
No, it was not. There are a lot of problems with Halloween Kills.
Yeah,
and it'd be fun to talk about, but like, it'd be frustrating and it'd probably go by pretty quick too.
Yeah. But the gist of it is, it didn't feel worth talking about, especially being we wasted that week anyway. So we were just going to bypass it. The second thing is, we decided not to do the top 10 movies on IMDb because Garrett got here and realized he just hadn't done it. And there's a couple movies in the top 10 that he just hasn't seen yet.
That's the whole thing.
So we couldn't do like a fair ranking anyway without going back and watching more movies that we didn't have time for. Instead... as our opening bit, I've got a little bit of a game for you.
Oh, God.
So this week, instead of a ranking, I wanted to, and we've talked about this before, about kind of wanting to branch out and do other things instead of just, you know, like top tens and things like that.
Yeah.
you have to excuse me. We're still both kind of getting over whatever it is we had.
Yeah.
So I guess I'll apologize either to you as the viewer or listener if you have to hear us coughing, or I'll apologize to Garrett if he takes the time to cut out the coughing.
I will. I'm going to have to take time out.
but anyway, so this week what I have is a list of some of the top horror movie quotes in the spirit of Halloween.
Oh, okay.
And I want you to guess the movie that it's from and the character that says it.
Okay. That sounds good.
So you can get, or actually, well, no, I'll give you up to 2 points per question. If you can guess the movie and the character, or if you give me the actor, I'll let you have that as well.
Okay.
All right. So number one, a census taker once tried to test me. I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
That's Hannibal Lecter from Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah.
Duh. I mean,
no, that's an
easy one.
There's going to be a handful of them that are pretty easy, but I wanted to go with a lot of the top ones. You know, I didn't want to go like too obscure.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there are going to be some really obvious ones on here, but hopefully there'll be some that trip you up.
Great. You're like a horror noob.
Your number two, I see dead people.
Haley Joel Osment in Sixth Sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was another easy one. This is a cakewalk.
So
you made this for toddlers, Tyler?
All the toddlers that have seen all these horror movies?
Don't poke holes in what I say, Tyler. You know, okay. I hate that.
Number three. We all go a little mad sometimes.
Norman Bates in Psycho.
Yes.
Bless you, baby. Oh, my goodness.
Number four, I have to return some videotapes.
I know that one.
I know you know this one. We've talked about this movie before.
It's Patrick Bateman in American Psycho.
Yes.
I love that movie. That I genuinely think that is a perfect movie for what it's going for.
Okay.
Perfect's really hard word, but it's a 5 out of 5 for me.
Okay.
I love it.
Yeah. Congratulations, you're still alive. Most people are so ungrateful to be alive, but not you, not anymore.
That's Tobin Bell, or Jigs, or Saw. What's his name in Saw?
Jigsaw.
It is Jigsaw, okay, yeah.
But yes.
Alright, that's easy.
Number six, It always starts out that way, and then comes all the running and screaming.
I don't know this one. I don't think. It sounds kind of like a Freddy Krueger line, but I can't. I don't know.
I don't know if it'll help at all, but the way I said it was more or less the way it's delivered in the movie.
So it's like super dry.
Yeah.
Can I get, okay, is it a modern movie? Kind of like Your Next or like Cabin in the Woods or something like that?
No, not by those standards.
Okay, so it's not like the self-aware kind of thing.
I wouldn't call it like an old movie yet, but it's
not... Oh, it's fucking, it's from Scream.
No.
Fuck you.
Wow.
I got mad, I'm sorry. I don't know. I give up.
That line is said by Dr. Ian Malcolm in The Lost World, Jurassic Park. It's Jeff Goldblum.
I know, but like, that's a horror movie?
Yeah.
I don't even like The Lost World. That's not even a good one. I prefer the third one over the second one.
Yeah. 0 points for that one.
Fuck you. I'm feeling severe this week. Yeah, I'm feeling really vicious. In the spirit of Halloween.
Number 7. Trust is a tough thing to come by these days.
Shia LaBeouf in Transformers Revenge of the Fallen?
That's definitely not a horror movie. Unless you're just talking about how I felt having to watch it.
That's a comedy. I don't know. I don't know.
RJ McCready from The Thing.
Never seen it.
You've never seen The Thing?
No, never seen The Thing.
Well, that's a line from The Thing.
No, well, now, great, you spoiled it now.
Yeah. Number 8. What an excellent day for an exorcism.
Is it The Exorcist?
Yeah. Do you know who says it?
Is it Father, what's his name? The one that doesn't really believe in all that stuff when he's going into it?
No, it's actually said by the demon, by Pazuzu.
Oh, Pazuzu! Pazuzu wasn't even mentioned until like the recuts or whatever, yeah. Wasn't he? Yeah,
I don't think so.
It's a stupid thing to add.
1 point for that one. Number 9. Sid, don't blame the movies. The movies don't create psychos. Movies make psychos more creative.
Okay, so that's clearly fucking Scream.
Yes, that one is Scream.
That's, what's his name? The guy opposite Matthew Lillard. I can never remember his name. His name is like Skeet in real life.
Yep.
Skeet Ulrich.
In the movie, his name is Billy.
Billy Loomis. Fuck, that's right, yeah. Billy Loomis from, he's like the double... A double reference in that.
Number 10. Hey, Pam, remember when I said the car was death-proof? Well, that wasn't a lie.
Is it death-proof? Yes. Is it Kurt Russell and death-proof?
Yes, it is. Have you seen Death Proof?
I have not seen Death Proof.
Really?
But I've seen some stuff about it, and I am interested in watching it.
It's a very, very unique kind of movie.
Yeah.
Number 11. You know, everyone's entitled to one good scare.
That's, that is either Norman Bates, or it's, Janet Leigh when she had her little cameo in Halloween H2O. Which, is it from Psycho? Is it Psycho?
No.
Is it, everyone's entitled to one good scare. I know that line. I don't know.
You were actually partway there. That's from the original Halloween.
It is from the original Halloween.
Janet Leigh says it again in H2O as like a callback.
But so then was it actually, Annie that said it in the original Halloween, or was it...
No, it was the police officer.
Brackett?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So, 0 points for that one.
Oh, fuck
you. You call yourself a Halloween fan.
I don't know if I've ever finished the original one. I just find it so dull. Yeah.
So this one, if you get this one, I'll give you like extra points.
Okay.
You know, I'll give you like 5 points for this one.
Okay.
Because I don't think you're going to know it.
Wow.
A man only drinks like that when he's planning to kiss a girl or kill a man. Which is it?
That's an older movie. I can tell by the line. It's a movie where someone drinks a lot. The Rum Diaries with Johnny Depp.
No.
Am I right in saying that it's an older film?
No.
Okay. Like, what are your standards of old? Is it 90s and back?
No. Or it's like real? I don't think by anyone's standards this is an old movie yet.
So is it 2010s?
Yeah.
So I wasn't too far off when I said Rum Diaries there. Oh my god. Man only drinks that much when he wants
to. A man only drinks like that when he's planning to kiss a girl or kill a man. So which is it?
I know that line. I've heard that line. I give up. What is it?
Dominic Cooper says that line in Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
Fuck you. That's such a dick. That was awful. Why would you do that? Why of all iconic horror lines, you throw in something from Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter? What? Have you even seen that movie?
I have. Me too. Haven and I went to see that in theaters.
You saw it in theaters. I saw it on Netflix.
We saw it in theaters in 3D. Oh my God.
It came out in 3D.
Yeah, that was during that phase when like everything was in 3D because people were like hyped about it for what was it, like 6 months or something? Do you remember that?
I do, yeah.
It only happened for like a year and then they started immediately phasing it back out. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I remember there was like the only movie I remember being in 4D was Spy Kids 4. And no one saw that. I didn't see that. But wow. Man, you really got me with that one.
Right.
I wouldn't have guessed it.
Number 13. Oh, you got a letter? I got run over. Helen gets her hair chopped off and Julie gets a body in her trunk. And you get a letter? That's balanced.
Helen. Is that Candyman?
No.
Okay. There's Helen in Candyman.
Yeah, it's a good guess.
You know, it's kind of a dumb game. No,
do you give up on this one?
Yeah.
That was said by Barry. The actor's name is Ryan Philippe.
Oh, is that fucking Know What You Did Last Summer? Come on. That's the only movie I remember Ryan Philippe being in.
Yep.
Besides Cruel Intentions, which was also a bad movie.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. Number 14. When there's no room in hell, the dead will walk the earth.
Dawn of the Dead.
Dawn of the Dead. Can you name the actor or the character?
Is it Ken Foray?
Ken Foray.
Yeah.
Very good.
Here we go.
And...
love Ken Foray.
Finally, number 15. They're here.
That's the little girl in Poltergeist.
Yes.
What's her name? Hold on, let me reply to this thing real quick.
Wait, no, no.
Hold on, just let me...
No, no, that's cheating.
No, I'm not. I'm not looking it up. I'm doing something else.
No, this definitely feels like cheating.
That's not what I'm doing. I'm not doing that. I'm not doing that at all right now. Just give me a second. Oh, it was Heather O'Rourke. That's what it was. Yeah, I remember.
I'm going to give you 1 point for that.
Why?
So, I see 1, 3, 5, 7, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 18. 18 points.
Out of What possible points?
Out of 30.
Better than half.
Yeah, just over 50%. Yeah.
Not bad. I'm used to that in grades.
Yeah. But it's like we were saying, considering that, you know, I gave some that were more obscure, some just straight up bad ones like Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter and stuff like that. I mean, it's respectable. You got all the ones that I kind of figured you would obviously get.
It really got me because I was like, I was super confident at first because it was just like one after another after another. Yeah. It was super easy. And then you got into like the nitty gritty.
Yeah.
I was like, ah, this guy.
But yeah, so that was, that's kind of like our stand-in opening segment since we did not do the IMDb one. If you as a viewer or listener liked that, we'd be happy to do more of that.
Yeah, it's actually pretty fun.
Yeah, I
enjoyed that.
You liked that too?
Yeah. Well, clearly Luna didn't.
And maybe we can... I don't mind putting them together. I enjoy doing stuff like that.
Yeah.
Or if you want to put one together for next week, maybe like you can test me on something else and we can kind of swap back and forth.
You know, it'd be fun. What if we played like that Kevin Bacon game? That was the game that we were playing.
Oh,
like,
yeah. Six Degrees of Separation.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You do that.
Yeah, we can do that too.
That's fun.
All right.
That's how we come up with ideas.
Yeah. We just bounce them off each other quick. But with that said, this week we are talking about Dune.
Mm-hmm.
Normally we try to give ourselves a little bit more time to digest movies and think about it, but we just watched Dune. We finished it, what, maybe an hour and a half ago?
Probably.
So
I feel very confident in my ratings.
I think I am too. I feel pretty comfortable with the scores I've given, but... if my thoughts change on it over the next like 24, 48 hours, I'll make sure to let you know in the next episode.
Yeah. Oh, that reminds me, you saying that, in last episode, I completely forgot in my list of, favorite actors. I forgot about a specific actor who probably would have made top five, maybe top three.
Yeah.
Is, Kelvin Harrison Jr.
Mm-hmm.
Who was in stuff like It Comes at Night and Waves. I absolutely love him. He's amazing. So, I'm sorry, Kelvin, but you totally would have made it. I just completely forgot.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, here at the BFG, we've got a custom rating scale that we use called the WAPMaster. Each letter stands for a different aspect of the filmmaking process, and it all comes together to form one acronym. There's 10 different categories, so you can get up to 100 points or as low as 10 points if we really, really hate the movie. Which I don't think even our most hated movies yet have hit.
No. I think one of them was like 14 or 17.
Yeah,
or something
we did
like
have
that.
One that was really low, but we haven't had one that hit 10 yet. So we're still on the search for that elusive worst movie ever.
Yeah.
But anyway, so to start off, the W in WAPMaster stands for writing. Is the film well written, clever, and cohesive? Are there plot holes, cringeworthy dialogue, or unmotivated moments that just to squeeze in a gag or sexual encounter? For the writing, I gave it a 9. I think that mostly due to the kind of iconic science fiction story that it's based on, it came together really well. But I feel like that's just as much credit to Dune the novel as Dune the movie.
Yep.
But I feel like it all worked really well. There was, I feel like, a little bit of reliance on knowing the plot, but, I mean, you were able to follow it easily, too, right? Even without reading the book.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure if maybe part of it was just because I kind of know the story already. But, yeah, it all felt good. The dialogue all felt pretty good. I didn't sit there, like, kind of wincing at it like I normally do.
Yeah.
Where there are some movies where it's like, even though you enjoy the script most of the way through, there's like those one or two lines where you're like, oh, no.
Especially like big blockbusters like this.
Yeah. But no, it all felt really good. It all felt really well written.
I give this a 7.
Okay.
Because it's mainly due to them having to scrunch in as much information as they can from the novel into this 2.5 hour long movie.
Yeah.
Like, that's bound to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But there were moments where it felt like the dialogue was like really, and the story structure in itself was really obvious where it was heading.
Mm-hmm.
In that way, like there were literally a couple moments where like I called out a line that was going to be said next.
Yeah,
like it was super. It wasn't cheesy really, because like there's kind of only one thing you could say in those moments.
Yeah,
but it also wasn't anything special. But then again, also at the same time, the story itself and like the cool premise and everything, the political intrigue that goes into the film is like super interesting, and I love that. It's mainly just like, you know, having to have it all condensed is where it kind of comes down to me.
Yeah. Which, I mean, even with that said, this whole movie, it's over 2.5 hours long, and it still covers, I don't think, even quite the first half of Dune.
Oh, wow.
It's not, it's more than a third, but it doesn't feel like they're quite halfway through. But I could be wrong about that. It's been a long time since I've read the book.
It did feel really good, the way that they were setting it up. And, like, because clearly they knew they weren't going to be able to cover everything, and that they need to, like, make sequels and such.
Yeah.
So it felt really good knowing that they were, like, you know, kind of taking, not putting as much into certain characters in the film and leaving them more like open-ended, because they knew, like, well, we can't give you this without having to take away this.
Yeah.
So we're just going to leave it up to like the later movies.
Yeah.
And instead of like, you know, trying to scrunch it all in, or trying to, you know, or just like cutting them out altogether, which I heard that there was one character they full on just cut out a main character.
Yeah.
But if it's needed, it's needed, you know. So
I'm kind of curious about like the naming scheme, because I feel like whenever you take a, you know, what's just a book and you split it apart, they normally find a way to distinguish them, and this is just called Duner. Yeah. More Dune. Dune the second. Under the planet of the Dune.
There you go. Rise of the planet of the Dune.
But, you know, is it just going to be called Dune 2?
Dune 2 in the Chamber of Secrets.
Yeah, because not only does that not sound great, like, Dune 2 just doesn't sound good.
The Empire Strikes Back.
But also, like, it's not Dune 2. You know, it's still part of the first book.
It would still just be Dune.
And I feel like, as much as maybe the movies themselves are not super excellent, I feel like the Hobbit movies did that really well. It was The Hobbit, but they gave them each a
little subtitle.
Resonant subtitle to let you know which one it was.
Yeah.
And I feel like maybe Dune should have gone with that kind of naming scheme, because now they're kind of stuck on, they're going to have to do some sort of naming scheme with the second one.
Yeah.
But that leaves the first one feeling out of place, because it's just called Dune. There's no like subtitle for it.
Yeah. Dune, the continuation.
Yeah.
But
chapter two.
You just reminded me of The Hobbit, and I hate those movies. So I'm a little pissed now.
All right. But yeah, so I gave it a 9. You said a 7?
Yes.
Okay. Next up is H for heart. Some movies revel in their own bad intent. We watch movies with heart to make us feel things. Does it compel us, inspire us, or make us think? Do we learn or grow from it, or is it forgettable and or too despicable for its own good? I gave it an 8. Mm-hmm. I think that there are these allegories on, like, race and politics and culture that were relevant in the 60s when the book came out, that are just as relevant, if not more, now. It's kind of come full circle, and it feels like a movie that, if it had been made, you know, even 10 years ago, it maybe wouldn't have been as resonant as it is right now. I feel like it kind of came along in the perfect time, and Villeneuve, I don't know if he did that on purpose, but it feels very, very applicable.
Yeah.
And beyond that, it's just a very well-made movie. It just kind of, you watch it, it makes you excited. It just kind of, like, pumps you up.
Yeah.
So I gave it an 8.
I gave it a 7.
Okay.
Because, like, originally I had it at a 6. But then, like, you know, thinking about, like, the political subtext and all that with it kind of does add more to it. And we were talking about this while we were viewing it, that like the allegories are like clearly there the entire time. And I think Denis, the way that he directed it, like he takes these allegories that were there in the 60s, and like you were saying before, really does like bring them more to a modern age where like they were already applicable, but now he's making them even more like, you know, applicable to now.
Yeah.
Like, it really, you know, it shows very well.
I feel like he has kind of enhanced them.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, like I've said, it's been a long time since I've read the book, but it feels like he's brought these things a little bit more front and center, where it was like in Dune, the subtext was there, in here it's more like front and center.
Yeah.
But that could just be, you know, I was younger and I didn't understand the book as well.
Yeah.
But it feels a little bit more in your face here, but it doesn't feel like it pulls you out, you know? Yeah. Like in Wonder Woman 1984, the messages really kind of bring you out of the movie and slap you in the face a little bit.
That movie's so funny.
And in here, it feels like it's telling you something, but it doesn't sacrifice entertainment to do that.
Yeah. In that part, I enjoy and I appreciate it very much because, like, yeah, it's front and center, but, like, it's not really, like, overstated at all.
Yeah.
But the writing does kind of, to me, feel like it does take away from the heart a little bit because of, like, how much they had to put into it, like, and not, like, leave some stuff out of the book and all that.
Yeah.
Which, I haven't read the book, but I assume that there's, like, quite a bit that was already not there.
Yeah.
With, like, more subtext-wise. But also, I didn't really care about the main character much at all.
No.
Well, and he clearly had plot armor through the entire thing as well.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's one thing that the book and this movie try to push is that they're really challenging this trope of, like, the white savior. And they're because Frank Herbert, one of the things he was pushing to do with Dune was really really embrace and bring light to I believe he was Islamic. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of, like, Islamic and, like, Bedouin heritage that he injected into this story, which shows through in the movie.
Yeah.
And they filmed on location. It was filmed in the Arab Emirates.
Oh, wow.
And so I think that, to an extent, there's supposed to be a little bit of, like, a lack of sympathy for this character, at least at the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're like, but it feels not as much of just, like, a lack of sympathy, but more as, like, in a way, a lack of character.
Yeah.
But then again, I'm sure that's, you know, to be expanded upon later on.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, for right now, it's a 7 for me.
Okay. We just finished Heart?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I got so lost for a second. I'm just looking at it, I'm like, it's just a bunch of words on the screen right now.
Yeah, what word are you?
So next up is A for acting. This category covers the obvious, the performances by at least the primary cast members. And this kind of goes right along with what we were just saying. I gave it a 7.
Mm-hmm.
I think that kind of the surrounding cast is admirable with what they're given.
Yeah.
Timothée Chalamet did not impress me a whole lot.
No.
I've never been a huge fan of Rebecca Ferguson. I feel like this is probably my favorite role of hers.
Yeah.
I think she did well in this role for the most part. But it was just kind of a treat, really, because I didn't read super deep into the cast, and so there were people popping up that I kept turning to you, and I'd be like, wait, is this that guy? Is this,
like,
that guy? Is this
Javier Bardem shows up, and we're like,
we
know that guy.
Who is that? And it took us the same.
Stellan Skarsgård and all that.
Stellan Skarsgård shows up. And so there, like, it was just kind of a treat to be able to go in without knowing the whole cast and being surprised by all these people that we knew. But yeah, so I gave it a 7 for at least the supporting cast.
Yeah. I gave it an 8.
Okay.
Because, again, like, everyone, with respect to Timothée Chalamet, who I'm sure was trying, but, like, came off as so wooden, like he usually does. I'm sorry, Timothy, but, like they really, like, he doesn't bring a whole lot of life to the movies that he's in.
Not normally.
I've noticed. Yeah,
he had very, like,
stoic in a way.
There were one or two scenes where I'm like, oh, wow, there's a lot of emotion here. That was good.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, whenever I'm talking about a couple scenes in a 2.5-hour movie.
But then again, that's also probably has something to do with, like, what you were talking about before with how, like, you're not really supposed to connect with him at first. And, and that does show. And he's a bit boring as a main character in a way, whereas, like, you have these cool, interesting side characters and everyone does a really good job. Jason Momoa, I almost called him Jason Mimosa. I've been calling him Jason Mimosa for years.
He tried to correct me whenever I actually called him by his name earlier.
I almost felt like Jason Mimosa, actually. he was surprisingly really good. I wanted so much more from him. So, like, when he wasn't in it anymore, I was, like, kind of, like, disappointed. I was like, oh, man, Jason.
Yeah.
But I loved him in it. I thought Rebecca Ferguson did a good job, and Oscar Isaacs, he was a bit wooden too, but again, he's like a stoic character. He's meant to be that way. The supporting cast is incredible, but boy, did they all play like such quick roles in it, except for Timothée Chalamet and Rebecca Ferguson. Mm-hmm. Those two are clearly like front and center the entire time.
Yeah.
Everyone else feels like they're playing such like smaller bit parts. And you know, that's fine. I understand. It's like, this is going to be a series, mm-hmm. But I did want so much more from like all of them.
Yeah.
Like after a while, but again, like when they were in it, they were great.
There were a lot of cool characters that I think were, well, and I mean, it's not, you know, to discredit the movie, that's, they're just following the plot of the book basically. Yeah. But yeah, I think that it would have been cool to see more of them if that had been a possibility.
Mm-hmm. But what can you do?
Yeah. Next up is P for production design. Mm-hmm. Do sets and costumes fit the genre and time period? Does makeup portray the situation? Does the beaten down hero still look perfectly coiffed while lying in the dirt? I gave this an 8. Mm-hmm. I thought the production design was really cool, and there were like certain parts where I was like, oh, I really like this.
Yeah.
And I really want to talk about like the cinematography, but I have to wait.
Yeah.
But as far as like strictly production design, uh-huh. I think, you know, I really liked what they did with the sandworm. Mm-hmm. It's an evocative part of the books, but like seeing them in the movie is just so cool.
Yeah.
And I really liked the way that the outfits were mm-hmm. done, like the more like sci-fi against the more like
they seem practical.
Yeah.
Really.
Like practical outfits, but also against kind of like we were saying this like Islamic and Bedouin culture, mm-hmm. And like the way they do the outfits like out in the desert and stuff like that, like it all looks really good, but it's just fantastical enough that it also feels like
it feels grounded.
Cool. Yeah,
like cool but grounded.
Yeah. And then the design of like the machines and things too, all the technology,
yeah,
like the dragonfly ship and stuff like that. That's like cool. It all just looks really good.
Yeah. I gave it a 9.
Okay.
First I had it as a 10, but like a few minutes after finishing it, I was like, I don't know if I want a 10, so I bumped it down to a 9.
Yeah.
But it was like, it was still like really, it was really cool what they were able to do. Especially in a setting of just a giant desert.
Yeah.
The fact that they were still able to get these, like, cool designs and all that out there, like, with the Islamic culture and, like, the surrounding culture with how they, the architecture of the buildings were, mm-hmm. which we didn't get a ton of that. I wanted a little bit more from like, the actual, like, indoor sets and everything. But, like, you know, from what we're seeing, it like, what we were given, it does look like, what would actually be there if it was in...
Yeah.
This scenario,
and it like all feels saying, very very lived in, very organic.
Yes, it does. Yeah. And you can tell like the stark difference between the house. What was the house called? Atreides. The Atreides like original home world, and then like going to this like desert world of Caracas.
Mm-hmm.
It's a clear step down for them, and it shows in the production design a lot. And the outfits, of course, like you were saying before, the Atreides looked like very regal and like militaristic.
Yeah.
But then you get to like the bad guys, the other houses like the Harkonnen.
Close enough.
And all that, like those guys are intimidating. But and then like the outfits of like the Fremen?
Yeah, Fremen.
This is going to be a lot of me just like not knowing what to say with the names or how to pronounce it. Again, like they look really good and really practical and lived in for like their scenario, like what they would probably be wearing in this way.
Yeah.
I liked it a lot, and you could see like the sweat and all that, and like the grime on our characters most of the time, mm-hmm. whenever, you know, they were going through like a tough moment or being on the sand with all the spice getting in them and everything.
Yeah.
That was really cool. I like that. I appreciated that a lot. So
no, there was kind of a the CGI was also top notch. There's a scene where they're in the desert. They're hiding like kind of under the desert sand.
Yeah.
There's like a desert mouse that comes by that's clearly not like a kind of like a fantasy mouse, but like also, it looks so good that you are like, I don't know if that's real or not.
like I couldn't tell.
Could that have partially been like practical effects or something? But it's like even in close up, like you see the sweat on this mouse's ear, and you stuff see like
the veins because like the sun is shining through the thin skin on the ear and all that. The fur, looked
so
oh my god, it was great. It looked amazing.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't even know if those animals actually would sweat, because I'm pretty sure they, you know, sweat through their paws and stuff like that. But I'm willing to give a little bit of artistic license here.
Yeah.
But yeah, like it's, I think the production design is fantastic.
Oh yeah. Next is M for marketing. Many movies give away too much or not enough in trailers, use poor music choices, or just don't do enough marketing to get people excited. Were we excited to see the film, and why or why not? This one I gave a 7. Credit where credit's due, you know. The trailer was good. It was exciting. It lets you know kind of what you're in for, this kind of sci-fi fantasy film. But I had mentioned to you before, I feel like part of my excitement was just due to knowing Dune and being like, oh, cool, you know, a new Dune movie. But I think it does well. Like, to its credit, I think the marketing does what it needs to do.
Yeah.
But I'm having trouble, like, judging it fairly because I had my own bias already going into it.
Yeah. I gave it an 8 because, you know, I've been following Denis, you know, films for a while since Prisoners.
Yeah, I think having his name attached to it kind of bumps it up in general.
But, and, like, you know, of course, knowing at least a good portion of the cast going into it and being hyped for that. The trailers were well done, but what brought it down for me a little bit was that, like, in the trailers, some of the effects looked like they weren't really finished yet.
Yeah, but and, they also looked that way in the movie.
Yeah, some of them did look that way. Like, they're that did take me out of it for, like, a split second, because there was only, like, one scene, really, that, like, in the actual film that looked the same as it did in the trailer, if not just, like, a tiny little bit brushed up, that, you know, I was like, okay, well, that's not, like, the best composition, but, you know, it's forgivable.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the trailers were cool. The work, the artwork and all that was sick.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I absolutely love it. So, like, I was excited, but there were just, like, a couple moments where I'd be like, eh.
Yeah.
And, like, knowing that Dune is such a giant, sprawling novel and how it'd be hard to fit so much into it, that's where I was also kind of, like, capping my excitement, where I was like, okay, don't get too excited now.
Yeah.
Because this could be terrible. So, but yeah, like,
so far,
kind of hard to not.
Like, I hesitate to say this because this feels really lofty.
Mm-hmm.
But watching this movie, this feels like it could be like Lord of the Rings level of like epic modern storytelling.
You mean like with how good it is, or like it's
just as far as like just like the scope?
The scope?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
Just, you know, this like massive sprawling epic that people are going to talk about for a long time.
Because like based, I can definitely see that it's like cultural impact and all that, and it's being in like the zeitgeist of like the next decade.
Yeah,
definitely. But quality wise, I don't know if I'd go that far.
No, because, like, I mean, I can tell you now, it's not going to have the same kind of lasting effect that the Lord of the Rings movies had.
Yeah.
Those
movies influenced so much of me growing up.
Yeah.
Like, oh my god.
And this too is a more unique visual style from Villeneuve that I don't think, where Michael Jackson's vision.
Michael
was
Jackson?
Michael.
Peter Jackson. Are you okay?
I think so. Where Peter Jackson's vision, you know, is a little bit more accessible, a little bit more commercial in the Lord of the Rings. Villeneuve is a little bit more of a unique.
Abstract.
Yeah. And two, on top of that, it's just a more divisive story. It's not like your standard, like, he gets plucked from nowhere to go
fish
on this big journey.
Yeah. Well, it is in a way, but, like, not as, like, blatantly as it is in Lord of the Rings.
Yes, I guess so. But I feel like from the beginning, he already knows. You know, it's like in the Lord of the Rings, it's very much like they don't want to go, and they have, you know, the hobbits are always like, ugh. Adventures.
Here we go again.
Yeah. Whereas
another movie.
Whereas with this, you know, it's like he knows that he's destined for great things one way or another.
Yeah, and people keep telling him and all that.
Yeah. But anyway, that was kind of a weird tangent to get off to on marketing, but Do you have anything else for marketing?
No, I think I'm good.
Next is A for audio. This category covers the orchestration and song choices and whether they enhance or elevate the film. This I gave a 7 for the rest of the audio design. Mm-hmm. I think most of the movie sounded really good. The music was serviceable, but also generic. Mm-hmm. It all felt like, you know, okay, this is a big sci-fi moment. We're going to have that sci-fi music that you hear in all the sci-fi movies. Yeah. And then we were talking about, especially in the desert, it's like there's that very distinct, like, I don't know if you, it's not yodeling, but that kind of like very, very evocative, like woman singing sound that you always hear in every desert and every movie.
Yeah. I'm picturing it in like Kingdom of Heaven right now.
Yeah.
Like it's a very...
Or like,
I think he's, Hans Zimmer might have done the score for Kingdom of Heaven, actually.
Did he?
Yeah, I'm going to look it up.
But yeah, so, you know, Hans Zimmer does fine, but if you've heard a Hans Zimmer soundtrack, you've heard most of Hans Zimmer's soundtracks. He's kind of like a modern John Williams.
Yeah, he really is.
But it's good for what it is, but it's nothing to write home about.
Yeah, and you basically said everything that I was thinking as well. Like, we talked about the music quite a bit, like, during and after.
Yeah.
Just because it was, like, it was so, like, exactly what you'd expect.
Because it was during, like the first big set piece. We were maybe, like, 20, 25 minutes in, and that like, big sci-fi, like, drums and intense music kicks up, and I immediately turned to you and I was like, who did the music for this?
Yeah. It's like, it's exactly what you'd, I guess you could say it's what you want, but it's like,
it's what it needs
to be. It's what it needs. Yeah, there you go. It's what it needs to be, because like, it didn't really feel like it did anything ambitious. It put you in the mindset of, this is a desert, this is sci-fi.
Yeah.
I'm watching this sci-fi movie. That's basically all it had to do. But it felt like it didn't use anything very, like, different.
Yeah.
Outside of maybe like the bagpipes being put in, mm-hmm. as like showing like a clear cultural clash and all that.
Yeah.
But other than that, it was like, anytime it'd come up, I'd be like, all right, well, there it is. Or like, I wouldn't even notice it really, because it's like, it's just there. It's just, it's mm-hmm. generic. It's what you'd expect. And it's especially in like these, like the modern scores that have been going around, I feel like a lot of them have been using that kind of ambient, like droning noise more often. And this one does it to the max. Like, it really gets into that sound. And it's like, it's quality music,
mm-hmm.
But it's not something that I'd go and listen to again.
Yeah.
And I found myself really preferring when Denis chose to have those moments of silence in the film, like when the enemies are like rappelling down into the Fremen area and it's like completely silent, over having him play Hans Zimmer's score and trying to set the tone of tension and all that. I really prefer the silent moments.
Yeah.
I feel like the score maybe got in the way occasionally sometimes. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I said it. I also gave it a 7.
Okay.
It felt like exactly the same way as you felt about it. But
All right, next is S for shooting. This is the cinematographer's job. Is the cinematography eye-catching? What color palette do they use? And is there a reason they use it to enhance the movie? Does the camera work enhance the scenes and make them unique? I gave the cinematography a 10. It's just a gorgeous movie. And it's very distinctly Villeneuve as well. I think watching this movie, it's weird because, you know, this is like a Bedouin sci-fi epic, mm-hmm. as opposed to Blade Runner's like unapologetic, like cyberpunk aesthetic.
Yeah.
But there were scenes that I would look at and I'd be like, this feels just like Blade Runner. And it's
in like scope?
Not scope, but almost like even just the style. Like, some of the visual flair that he puts on is so distinctly Villeneuve that it's like you can identify it. And it looks really good.
I felt basically the same way. I gave it an 8.
Okay.
Because, like, I enjoy the cinematography quite a bit. I think it's a beautiful movie. I think they really use their the desert to like as much as they could in yeah. like the natural beauty of the landscape and all that.
Mm-hmm.
They incorporated the CG and all that into it very well.
Yeah.
Like it was absolutely gorgeous when the sandworms were like diving through the sand, you could see like it all puffing up and like the sand dunes collapsing and all that.
Mm-hmm.
It looked so good and so real.
Yeah.
It was incredible. But I'm also like, you know, I felt like it did have like that distinctly Denis feel.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that. It reminded me of, like you were saying, Blade Runner, like Sicario.
Yeah.
Or like Arrival, definitely as well.
Mm-hmm.
But it felt like occasionally there could have been a better opportunity to use more interesting angles and composition with it. Sometimes it felt a little, it felt like I wanted a little bit more from it.
Okay.
In like the scene after they crash their little dragonfly mm-hmm. ship, and Rebecca Ferguson and Timothée Chalamet are getting out, they use like a really interesting composition, like shooting through the window, and you can still see the sunset on the other yeah. side and all that. That looks super cool.
Mm-hmm.
That looked beautiful. And then like some of the scenes where they're coming face to face with the worm,
yeah,
as we were saying while we were watching it, that looked incredible.
Yeah.
But then also it felt like during like much of the dialogue scenes or like in scenes where they'd be getting composition or not composition, sorry, exposition across and all that, it felt like there could have been like a bit more of a flair put on it
mm-hmm.
than there actually was. And like they could have maximized that location and like the talent that they had, like shooting wise,
yeah,
a little bit more in those times.
Yeah.
And also it's just like not as much of like my preferred style of like cinematography when watching a film,
mm-hmm.
but I can definitely recognize the beauty in it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Next is D for directing. Perhaps one of the most important elements, the director makes sure the movie comes together. Is the film effective at conveying a tone, message, or visual that the director intended, and can you identify them by their good or bad habits when filmmaking? I also gave this one a 10. I think that, it's like I was saying with the cinematography, this is very unapologetically a Denis Villeneuve film. It feels like his other movies, but also better. It feels like he's kind of refined his... And maybe part of it is just because he has source material to work with here,
yeah.
which I guess he's had before, you know, with at least with Blade Runner, you know, he had the previous Blade Runner and like kind of the tabletop RPG mythology yeah. behind it. But I think maybe having Dune to work with helped him with his pacing some.
Mm-hmm.
But this just, it feels very much like one of his movies. And in all of the good ways, it doesn't show as many of his bad habits of being sometimes style over substance.
Yeah.
But it takes all of the good parts of his movies and makes the best of them.
Yeah. I gave the directing a 9.
Okay.
Because not only like everything that you were saying there, but also like actually basically everything that you were saying there with like how it's just is such his like unique clear style.
Yeah.
There's no one else you can mistake this film for.
Mm-hmm.
I was saying while we were watching it that it was that the only other person that might be able to make a movie like similar to this, especially visuals wise,
yeah.
was Ridley Scott.
Mm-hmm.
And because they both kind of have that grander scale
yeah.
in a lot of their productions. But Denis does it in such an interesting kind of tone back way
mm-hmm.
where like he's showing you so much, but it still feels like he's keeping some of it away.
Yeah.
And I love that. Yeah. I think that's like, it's super, like it's ambiguous, but in the best way possible.
Mm-hmm.
I think like, I hesitate to give it a 10, and I'm not sure why exactly, but I can't for some reason. I had it at a 10 originally, and I was like, I don't know.
Yeah.
And some of that might be because of like more of the kind of generic feeling points in the film.
Yeah.
Which like aren't necessarily his fault
mm-hmm.
or like stuff that he couldn't really handle, but it did take a little bit away from it for me.
Yeah.
Whereas if those were gone or like done in just a slightly different way,
mm-hmm.
then this film would have a clearly a higher score. Yeah, I would enjoy it more in that way. But yeah, it's a 9. Tyler dropped something. Oh no, not the pacifier.
We'll clean it good.
Oh yeah. But yeah, it was incredibly well directed.
Yeah. Next is E for editing. Does the movie have a visual rhythm? Does it flow well, keep the viewer engaged, and scrub bad performances? And which angles did they decide to use when cutting between cameras? This one I also gave a 10.
Oh, wow.
I think, especially for him, I think maybe I gave it more credit because it's Villeneuve.
Yeah.
And I'm so used to his kind of like pacing issues and just kind of focusing on these, you know, the visual flair and the eye candy sometimes, that this was just so refreshing. To see one of his movies that I can genuinely say was very well paced and very coherent. Whenever I'm so used to kind of him kind of going off on a tangent a little bit.
Yeah. I gave this a 7.
Okay.
The pacing in this film is immaculate. And we were talking about it a lot again. Like, it was talking about quite a few of these things when we're watching these movies together, but like not to this extent, of course.
Yeah.
But I thought the pacing was like incredibly well done. I did not feel bored for like an instant. Mm-hmm. Not like in, I love Blade Runner 2049, but I was a little bored occasionally. Like I did feel like, well, not, I wouldn't say bored, but like it dragged. It definitely dragged. And like you were saying, that is like kind of a, there's a bit of a pacing issue sometimes in his movies, but I think that's just like what he prefers to have. And those like slower moments where like when something does come up, it's like a punch in the gut. Mm-hmm. And you really feel it. I understand why, but like this one, it felt like because it was such a giant blockbuster, they were really trying to make the pacing like as like, you know, evenly put together as they could for general audiences. And it comes off that way very much. Like you could definitely feel this like 2.5 hour long movie going by like at such a like an easy, brisk pace, but it doesn't like really feel like anything's being skipped over. It feels like everything was still given the allotted amount of time that it needed when going into it. While I do think that the pacing was really well done, I also do think that there weren't as many like fun editing moments in the film like there were in movies like Prisoners or movies like Sicario, where I felt like the editing was more dynamic in a way.
Yeah.
In Dune, there were moments like mainly with the dream sequences where things were like pretty well like put together and interesting, but then it also felt like it was kind of taken away with some narration that would go over a couple of them, where he's like explaining to people like what the dreams were, and I didn't care for that too much. But other than that, you don't get a whole lot of like inspired editing. It's mainly just like, you know, the casual kind of like, here's a blockbuster, here's the editing, here's the film.
Yeah,
take it. You're gonna like it because it's the, for general audiences kind of feel. Like not a whole lot special was done with it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
All right, and finally, R is for reflection. The most subjective of our categories, it's simply a gauge of how much we enjoyed the film because of or despite the rankings we gave in other categories. For this, I gave it a 7. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot to enjoy visually from it, especially, and also just from the story. I think it does kind of take some of the standard tropes and turn them on their head, and it's a very good adaptation of Dune, at least so far.
Yeah.
Far better than we got with the previous adaptation
from
David Lynch. But I'm still a little bit apprehensive about how it's going to be moving forward with the next chapters, but I think it at least this first movie has proven itself really well.
Yeah.
I'm excited to see what happens next.
Yeah. I also gave it a 7, which, in like the, in when you think about like series films.
Yeah.
Having it with like a solid rating, like a 7 in basically any of the movies is, really good and impressive.
Yeah.
Because like you have like the Star Wars movies where the prequels, boy, that first one was definitely not a 7. And then like the Hobbit movies. I wouldn't give the Hobbit a 7 and all that. Like, it does its job, kind of like the score. It does its job. It does what it needs to do, and it's enjoyable. It's entertaining, but you could tell there's stuff that is not there, and stuff that you really like are missing in these moments, like character stuff.
Yeah,
and of course that's going to lead over into the sequels. And what I'm feeling is that this is either going to be like one of those movie series where like you have to watch them all together and like count them as like one film, or it'll just be like really bad going forward. There's like only really two ways you can go. You can't really, there's not like a middle ground in that.
Yeah.
So, cause like clearly there's more. Not like in Lord of the Rings, it feels like when the Fellowship of the Ring ends, you could be like, all right, great movie.
Yeah.
Like there's clearly going to be a sequel, but like, I don't feel like I always have to watch the Twin Towers. Oh God.
The Two Towers.
Oh God. The Two Towers. Afterwards,
I'm glad I'm not the only one making those.
Yeah, oh boy. But I feel like you don't have to watch the Two Towers immediately afterwards. But with Dune, it's feeling like that's how it's gonna be.
Yeah,
like I can't watch one without the other, or else it's gonna be incomplete.
Yeah,
and like I'm excited, but I'm also apprehensive in a way. So is Denis doing the other ones? Do we know that, if he's the one that's going to be directing those?
I don't know if he's doing all of them or if this is going to be like a Star Wars thing now where they kind of drop it on other directors as they go.
Oh, God. Maybe I feel like Dune lends so... It's a perfect story for his style.
Maybe they can give the next one to Ridley Scott.
That'd be interesting if Ridley Scott's still alive then. That dude is ancient. He's been kicking around for so long. I still need to watch The Last Duel. Have you seen it yet?
I haven't seen The Last Duel. I got another recommendation to see The Last Duel from another friend of mine, but I haven't seen it yet.
Yep, I might watch it today actually.
Yeah.
But I've had like a big urge to watch The Wrestler for some reason. I've just been like really feeling that story.
Yeah.
But then I think about it and I'm like, oh, but I've seen it like 10 times, and like I already know what's gonna happen, but it'll probably like. Knowing The Wrestler, it'll probably still hit me the exact same way each time.
Yeah.
So, you know.
So my final score for Dune the first, ended up being an 83.
Oh, nice. That's kind of what I was hoping mine would be. Mine came out to 77.
Okay, so pretty close.
Yeah, I was wanting mine to be actually the exact score I had in my head, where I'd be like, this would be like a great first entry if this came out to like an 83. Yeah. That was like my exact first score.
Well, I got you covered.
But yeah, thank you. But for me, it came out to a 77. And like, I did a few like adjustments. I want to show what's going on camera because that's adorable. That's cute. Come on.
Thanks.
That's really cute. Anyways, back to me. but I felt like I wanted more from it. Like a lot more from it, but that's like, again, I also feels like they're trying to do that. They're trying to make you really want to see that sequel. And from like the looks of the box office, this is like doing a good job.
Yeah, it's been out for Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 3 days.
Yeah,
four if you consider opening night, like premiere. And it's already, you said, mostly accrued its budget?
Yeah, IMDb says that the budget was an estimated $165 million, and it came out so far with, like, what it's giving is $147
million. Wow.
So, that's really good. Let's hope that stays. It stays going in that direction, because I want more stuff like this as blockbusters and not, like, more generic, like... stuff, which is what I'm worried The Last Duel will be, especially with the cast. That's such a weird cast for like a medieval film.
Yeah, but like I said, I've got it on good authority that it's a very
Matt Damon's a knight that's trying to fight for his family's honor, but it's not good whenever Adam Driver comes in to ruin his party time. I don't know.
Adam Sandler plays a jousting sword in Matt Damon's new epic.
Adam Sandler plays Matt Damon.
but so with that said, that was our thoughts on Dune.
Yeah.
And I think we both kind of said we're at least apprehensively excited for the next chapter.
Yeah.
And what's on, or I know what's on the chart for next weekend.
Yeah. Which is Last Night in Soho and probably the French Dispatch as well.
Yeah. Last Night in Soho is going to be our definite, I think.
Definitely, yeah. We have to.
Because Edgar Wright.
Mm-hmm. If we both happen to see
French Dispatch, I was looking a little bit more into it. It looks like there's some funny stuff with the way it's releasing, mm-hmm. As far as like art house films and stuff like that.
Yep.
So some places were saying they were going to show it today, mm-hmm. or starting, you know, like this weekend, but I couldn't find any of the local places that would. Mm-hmm. But I did see another place that said it was supposed to be releasing like nationally next weekend. So it might be like both of them come out like Thursday or Friday.
Okay.
So we'll see. We might also get to The French Dispatch by mm-hmm. Wes Anderson. But the definite plan is Last Night in Soho.
Yeah.
And then we might have another game put forth. Doing that for a little bit just to break away from the rankings and stuff.
Make it a little more fun.
Yeah, something a little bit more varied. But until then, we hope you guys enjoyed this episode, and we will see you in the next one. Bye.
Bye.